This is Spectrum.
Alternative Medicine, Homeopathy, Secret Society, Hypnosis, The Paranormal, Alternative Energy, UFO Abduction, The Weird, The Wild, and The Wonderful.
With your hosts, Tom Theophanis and Scott Jordan.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Spectrum Radio Network on BBS Radio 2. I'm Scott Jordan, here with my co-host, Tom Theophanis, and remember, there's no such thing as too much information. Unless, of course, you have wisdom, in which case, you don't need any more information. Hey, Tom, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How you doing, Scott?
I'm doing good. We have a great guest this week, Dee Wallace.
Yes, we
and
do.
If you could tell us a bit about her, that'd be great.
I certainly will. Well, Dee is a familiar face on television and film. Her films range from some of the scariest to some of the funniest, including Cujo, The Howling, Ten, The Frighteners, and Critters. And of course, above all, the one that defined hope and dreams for a generation, E.T., which was my favorite, of course, The Extraterrestrial. She has starred in 4 television series and more than 400 commercials and is one of Hollywood's most sought-after TV guest star. She has worked with some of Hollywood's biggest names, including Steven Spielberg, Peter Jackson, Wes Craven. And she has written 2 previous books, one called Conscious Creations and The Big E. In her new book, Bright Light, one of Hollywood's leading actresses and acting teachers for the past 3 decades, have much more on her mind than teaching acting. Instead, she uses her life experiences and spiritual skills learned through her acting craft to teach people how to illuminate and activate their spirituality rich and creative essence for a far more satisfying life. So let's welcome Dee Wallace to the show. Hi, Dee.
Wow, I'm impressed. Thank you.
Hello, Dee.
Hi, baby. How are you?
I'm good. I think we should start out, I'd like to start out sort of where you got interested in the more spiritual aspect of things, mainly because you started off in the beginning as an aspiring dancer and then decided that wasn't really what you were going to do. You went a little bit more into acting and then you did a whole bunch of movies. I want to know, is the spiritual aspect of what you talk about in your books sort of something that came later, or was it sort of always there?
No, I think it was always there. Actually think it's always there for most of us. Mm-hmm. If you drop the word religion and insert the word spirituality, I mean, I think spirituality is simply a belief in the creation of energy, which we all are. So. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I come from a fairly, religious background, but very loose Methodist upbringing. But my older brother was a minister. Actually, he worked his way through seminary shooting pictures for Playboy, which sort of sums up my family and me. Yeah, we're a real dichotomy of both worlds. And
didn't,
I think
didn't
that's...
You, didn't your dad say something to the effect of, I don't have to go to church to believe in God?
Yeah, that was his big, you know, disclaimer for being able to get really drunk on Saturday, not getting up on Sundays to go to church. So, I mean, and I believe that that's a truthful statement. I think a lot of very religious people... do not abide by the rules of unconditional love. And a lot of people that don't go to church automatically are unconditional love. So I don't think the two of them go together, you know, have to go together at all, and sometimes are in great opposition to each other. But anyway, you know, my mom did all the religious plays at my church. My dad did the scenery. Grandma did the costumes. I started out as baby Jesus and ended up as Mary. And so spirituality and acting for me always kind of went together.
Okay. Well, that definitely, you know, focuses it a little bit. The course you're doing now, you're doing with your book, which is called Bright Light, Spiritual Lessons from a Life in Acting by Dee Wallace. That, well, how did that come about? Was that just a self-reflection thing and you just need to get it on paper?
Yeah. I think I was in hell and I was a victim and I was unhappy. And I saw most of the people in my world around me kind of living out the same thing. And I dropped to my knees one night and said, I don't want to be this way anymore. I don't want to be a victim. I don't want to be angry anymore. I want my light back, and I want a way that we can heal ourselves. And that was the beginning of all the information coming in. You know, 15 years later now, I'm very extremely clairaudient, and I never really understood ask and you receive until all this started going down, you know.
Sounds like you had a bit of a spiritual download.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to steal that. Spiritual download. That's very good. I like that. You know, but when you go from hell back into joy and happiness, and I don't want to sound too Pollyanna, but that's kind of what my life is. I wanted to tell my story in an entertaining way with all my movies and all the great directors I've worked with, but the spiritual lessons that I learned in my life along the way, because I discovered an acting technique that literally is a metaphor for the creation process, pretty much. And I didn't realize it. I didn't realize it until later in life that this technique that Charles Conrad taught us all was what I was saying creation was all about.
And what's the name of that Charles Conrad technique?
The Charles Conrad technique. I don't know. I don't think he had a name. It's loosely based on Meisner.
Okay.
You know, but I don't think he had a name for it.
Okay. So would you describe that as method acting?
No.
No?
Okay. No, not at all. Basically, it's you don't think about it. You don't work on it. You don't break a script down. Pretty much, we were taught to pick up a script, read it once, and get up and do it. And what that does is it tells your conscious mind it might as well give up because it doesn't know what to do anyway. And it's all based on energy, so you get your energy really high and surpass your conscious mind. And you, what happens is you become a channel. You become a channel for the character, and you kind of become a channel for the emotions and everything. And you get out of your own way, basically.
Right, you get out of your own linear mind that wants to put everything in little tiny boxes and line everything up.
Yeah. Yeah, and keep control and manipulate it and stay in fear about whether you're making the right choices. And, you know, and it's really a metaphor for life. If we could just say what we want, be clear about what we want, hold the intention about what we want, and let the universe do it for us and channel it, then we'd all be in really good shape.
And that works outside of acting. I mean, that's a pretty broad spectrum thing that can work in any area of life, right?
It's the core of creation. So any time you're creating yourself and ergo your life, then you're using that technique if your creation's working.
Right on. That sounds perfect. I read a quote in your book. You were called to do a acting role where you were a rape victim and you just sort of flew out there to do it, got rushed on set, and you had learned all these acting techniques, the left brain put it all in a box and doing your beats and lining it all up. And they just sort of rushed you out there and just said, action. And you tried to act, and the guy... The director said, cut, and ran out and said, that was horrible. And that's when you went back into your own place of just living through the character. And then you did the scene perfectly. And the director came out and gave me a big pat on the back and said that was perfect. But that's sort of what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's releasing and letting energy move through you without having to control it. But all of us are so damn taught from the time we are tiny, 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 that if you don't control everything, if you don't manipulate everything, if you don't figure it out, you're not going to be safe in the world, and you're not going to do it right.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, we pull ourselves in and pull ourselves in, and we become less authentic and less authentic, and our light becomes diminished, and our light is what we use to create with. So the older we get, the less we create ourselves authentically the way we want to create ourselves, because we've lost all that.
Yeah, we're trained Pavlovian dogs, you know, that they're the same.
Yeah.
The saying you can't teach an old dog a new trick comes from somewhere.
Absolutely. And it's because, you know, the stuff is so ingrained in that little brain that you just keep, it's like, who moved my cheese? I'll just keep running the same hamster wheel and go back and still not get what I want. Well, that's what we're doing. We're, you know, judging money, resenting money, being in stress about money, wishing we had more money, hating the fact that we don't have money, and then we want to find money in our lives.
Right, right, right.
And, you know, it doesn't compute. If you're not in harmony with what you want, you're not going to create it.
That's right. The universe doesn't take any jokes. If you focus on not having, then the universe takes that as a directive. And, you know, I don't have money. I can't have money. Where's my money? Then the universe goes, oh, okay, so
no money. Concept,
so no money.
Yeah. That's
I was like me.
Yeah. The universe, all the universe hears is no money. All right, I can do that.
Yeah, whatever you focus on, the universe says yes. So you better know whatever you got in your life, that's what you're focusing on somewhere, somehow.
Somewhere, somehow. I get that.
Well, yeah, for me, the thing that runs everything is, as you believe, baby, you're going to get it delivered to you. So look at your beliefs, because your beliefs become your actions, become your focus, become your life.
Yeah, my wife's a big believer in that. I'm not a big believer, because believer doesn't really cover it. You have to be a knower.
Yes, thank you.
You have to be, you know, the belief in something is something far away from you. It's something outside of you. A knower is something inside.
Well, and, you know, quite frankly, even those of us who know often find ourselves going at the creation of it from still the wrong focus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I teach this 24/7. I do private sessions all over the world, you know, and I caught myself the other day and I went, oh my God, I'm doing it. I'm doing what I talk about. I'm focusing on what I don't want instead of just saying, no, this is what I want. This is what I'm going to create. But we, you know, there's that little part of our brain that still goes, bullshit.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to somebody a couple of weeks ago who said something very powerful to me. And he says, you don't go meekly on your knees to the universe and beg for something. You are the universe. You demand.
Yes, well, actually, the original meaning of ask is claim or demand.
Yeah, exactly.
So please, if I'm worthy, I know I'm a big piece of dog doo, but if you think I'm fit, could you give this to me? Was not ever the intention.
Yeah. Oh, and I don't want it for me. I want it for somebody else. I'll throw in the humble aspect of self. It's not for me, you see. It's for my children. That's why I need $10,000. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, your children know how to ask for themselves.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And we teach them how not to.
yeah. Again, this reminds me of some other interviews we've had. We've talked to Tom's teacher on hypnosis, and we were talking about how children are born knowing how to swim. But with the parents being so afraid of the children getting near water, they keep saying, anytime they go near the edge of water, they say, no, get back, bad. So they, with fear in their voice, and that instills fear into a child who knows and was born knowing how to swim, they start learning this program of water, fear, bad, and then they lose, they have to retrain them in grade six or so to swim.
Well, and that's the same thing with asking for what we want.
Right.
By 2 o'clock, by the time we're 2 years old, you know, it's, don't ask for what you want. Don't say you want that toy. Get out of the sandbox. Johnny wants to get in. Don't speak up. Don't say how you feel. Be quiet. The adults are talking. Then we get to 21 and go, why the heck can't I create my life?
Yeah.
Yep. It's the same thing.
Same,
you know?
Problem, yeah.
We've been programmed out of it. So this reminds me a little bit of a research study I did quite a number of years ago, probably 18 years ago, on near-death experiences. And it sort of turned from a three-month research project to a two-year research project because I was getting answers from all over the world. And what I found that was very interesting was the people all over the world who are having near-death experiences had archetypes in their experience, in their near-death experience. Some would see Jesus, some would see Muhammad, some would see Buddha, some would see, depending upon where they were from culturally, how they'd been trained from early childhood to wherever time they had the near-death experience, that archetype would be center in the experience. Now, the interesting thing is children below 8 years old or 7 years old, even less, six or five, that had near, they've either, you know, they died and then came back, they would tell about this experience. But the difference is, because they are young and they haven't built this whole matrix of how they look at the world up yet, all they've seen is a ball of love or a ball of light.
Yeah.
That's it. They didn't see Jesus. They didn't see Buddha. They didn't see, no archetypes took that center stage in their experience. It was just, when you ask them what it was they seen, they just said, well, it was a ball of that loved me, a ball of light that loved me.
Yeah, well, and now you understand the importance of bright light.
Yeah.
Because when we lose our bright light, we lose the essence of the God we are. And we lose the power to create ourselves and love ourselves. I think, you know, I think the cornerstone of everything is loving yourself. Mm-hmm. And like we've already talked about, socialization begins. And the first thing we're taught is not to love ourselves and ask for what we want.
Yeah. And be humble. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Don't speak out.
Well, and that's one of the big messages in Bright Light is, you are magnificent, you know. It's your right and your duty to be the brightest light that you can be. And, you know, my story is everybody's story. On Amazon, that's the biggest comment I have from the reviews on Amazon is, oh, my God, you know, I read this and it's all about your acting career, but it's my story. It's my, this is, I remember when I turned my light down. I remembered when I became smaller. I remember when I gave my power away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're the only ones that can give ourselves permission to be those magnificent people again, right?
Right. Was there a point in your life when you realized it hit you like, was it a gradual thing, or did it just hit you like a ton of bricks one day that, wow, I'm living my life for other people, or I'm living my life in some other matrix that's been made up for me, and I need to focus on me and what's important. Was that a gradual?
Well, I think, you know, I don't think I was always that way. I was pretty naive and happy. After E.T., by the time I left Kansas, and I had never been out of Kansas in my life, and I moved to New York by myself, between that time and the time I did ET was a little under 5 years, which is unheard of in my business.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's pretty, meteoric.
Pretty amazing.
But I weave this through Bright Light. Early in my childhood, I had gotten a lot of messages, those good old Midwestern messages, you know, of you don't need more than you just need, Dee Dee. Don't ever say you're good. Don't claim how magnificent and talented you are. You know, let other people tell you you're good and then you deny it. You know, those are all basic, are basic limiting messages that really most of us are brought up with.
Yeah.
And so when E.T. hit and I became an instantaneous star overnight, pretty much, all those messages kicked in. You went too far. You went too fast. You have too much. You don't tell people you're good. Don't do the publicity. So yeah.
You had a bit of a spiritual dark night of the soul there at that point.
Yes, which ultimately was my spiritual awakening when I discovered it, you know, but I think that's also a belief that, and I talk a lot about this on my talk shows, that this whole belief in polarities, that we mm-hmm. keep going, that we don't know how to create wellness without sickness. We don't know how to define wealth and define more than enough without lack. You know, I don't think that's true, but I think we believe it's true. And so as we believe, we're going to create it. So that keeps us on the roller coaster and the hamster wheel of, oh, wow, I'm making it. Oh, man, now I got sabotaged again. Oh, look, I'm going to make it this month. I'm going to have enough money. Oh, my God, now the refrigerator broke. See, and it happened again. I mean, that kind of sums up most people's lives that I know.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether it's in relationships or money or health or whatever. And I just don't think that's a reality. I think it's our reality.
So when things are going good, people are internally waiting for the crash.
Yeah, waiting for the shoe to drop.
Yeah.
You know, waiting for the tornado to hit.
Yeah.
So Dee, how do you think can we put that message out on a large scale to be able to make those changes in people? Because, I mean, we're trying to teach new tricks to, you know, old dogs nowadays.
Yeah, but, you know, I do pretty much tough love on my shows because I go, you're responsible for the choices you make. And every moment you're in choice, every single moment. So, you know, people will call and go, yeah, but my ego gets in the way. And I'll say, and who's in charge of that? You know, I don't take a lot of stock in all this ego BS. I really don't. I think it's just another way to say the devil made me do it.
Right.
I want to do this. I want to do this, but I just can't make myself do that. And I go, that's not true. You can make yourself do it. You're just saying you can't make yourself do it, which is a continual message that you give yourself, right? Because you're not really choosing to do it. So let's find out why you're not choosing to do it. So the first thing is you got to choose. You got to choose to take responsibility for your life. And you got to choose that you're not going to give yourself an out, period.
Right.
And once you decide and make a deal with yourself on that, then it's no holds barred. Then you can go, all right, so I'm not going to give myself an out. I'm not going to be a victim. I want to write a book. Oh, well, I don't know how to write a book. Okay, but I said I was going to write a book, so I'm going to go find out how to write a book. Yeah, but you know, most people aren't very successful writing a book. I don't care. I said I was going to write a book, and I'm going to go write a book, so I've got to find out what's the first thing I do to write a book. You see, there's no outs then.
Yeah.
We keep giving ourselves outs because we don't love ourselves enough to be powerful in our lives.
I agree. That's a good way to look at it, definitely. Tom, do you have another question?
Yeah, I mean, this being, you know, one of my favorite movies, I have to ask you this since we got you on here. How did you get this part in E.T. at that time?
Actually, Tom, I auditioned for Used Cars. Did you ever see Used Cars?
I did.
It was another Spielberg movie. Fortunately, I did not get that one. What Steven said to me was he wanted everybody in E.T. to be childlike and childish. And I had that naive, vulnerable quality of a child that he wanted. And so he saved me for E.T.
You can take the girl out of Kansas.
Well, I guess it's kind of true. Blake Edwards, when I did 10 with Blake, he looked at me and smiled and he said, you know, Dee, I can line 9 little old ladies up and let you shoot them in cold blood. And the audience would go, oh, it's something bad that happened to her when she was a child that made her do that.
They wouldn't blame you a bit, yeah.
Although, you know, in The Frighteners, I think I was a pretty scary bitch.
Okay, I agree. That's true. That's true.
So how did this particular movie, I mean, apart from what it did for your career, how did it affect you any other way? Did it change any of your ideals, your thoughts?
What, E.T.?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got this is coming from a UFO investigator who was the former director of MUFON Ontario. So, of course, he's going to ask you about that.
Well, you know, I got to say no. From the little time I was a little girl, I believed in ETs.
Ah, okay.
I mean, it was just a normal, natural, it was like something I knew.
Not for that, well, that sets you apart then, because, I mean, a lot of people.
I guess. Yeah. I never thought it was weird, you know? Do I have any inkling that I've ever had an experience? No, not at all. But it just seemed normal and natural to me. And you know, Dolores often says she has archives and archives of people, you know, through her past life regressions.
Yep.
That have had ET experiences. And she said she's never uncovered anything that would suggest that they are anything but intent on helping us and really protecting us from ourselves.
Yeah, that's Dolores Cannon, in case anybody's wondering. Dolores Cannon, who wrote The Convoluted Universe.
You know, that's kind of always what I thought. So this was a normal thing for me. And I know when I read the script behind closed doors at the studio, I called my agent and I said, look, you know, I don't think this is going to do much for me, but I love this story. I think it's going to be a great story for the world. It's all about love and your heart and keeping your heart open. And all those things are true. I knew them back then. I knew them when I was 4 years old sitting in church hearing about God being pissed off at me and turning around to my mom and going, Mommy, God isn't mad at me. God loves me.
Ah,
he doesn't know what he's talking about. So I always knew the truth back then, you know.
That's good. So give us a little bit of the highlights of your career. Like, what was the, besides E.T.?
Definitely one of the highlights was the Lou Grant show where I played a hooker, because that was a huge guest star role that got me the part in 10, got me the audition that got me the part in 10 with Blake Edwards. I would say certainly a highlight in my life, probably the highlight in my life. And my career, for every moment of my life, was the conception and the birth of my daughter. Six specialists said I would never have a baby. I said, well, God and I have a different plan. And she's now a beautiful 22-year-old woman who's starting her acting career. And so that was, as far as I'm concerned, a miracle that I created.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And of course, my beloved husband, Christopher, very important part of my life. We did a lot of our work together, as you know. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking earlier when you were talking about all these people that you had interviewed in near-death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Chris had told me before I met him he had a brain aneurysm.
Oh, okay.
And they got him to the hospital. A friend found him on the floor, and they got him to the hospital the next day. And the doctors called his family out and said, I don't think he's going to probably live more than 24 hours. And so they flew out, and he said he left his body. Now, this is a big old burly Marine, okay?
Yeah.
Who became quite spiritual after this, I might add. And left his body and was hanging up in the corner of the room. And he said to me, Dee, I remember the light. I remember this amazing light of love. And I wanted to go, and I started to go. And I turned around and looked at my body on the table. And I had the thought, oh, there's something I'm still supposed to do. And that quickly, he was back in his body.
Yeah, that's a similar story you hear over and over. You hear all kinds of stories about how people will be out of their body, floating above the operating table. They're being flatlined. The doctor's pounding on their chest, trying to revive them. They're, you know, doing the paddles to restart the heart, and they're dead, you know, and they'll think about their husband or their wife, and just as quick as that, boom, they're over where their wife or husband is watching them, and, you know, the wife's running around the house doing something, or she's in the backyard swimming in the pool, and then they'll go through a tunnel of white light, and then they'll either, like I said before, they'll see an archetype, or if they're not, you know, if they're not programmed with an archetype, a religious archetype, then they'll just see a ball of light, a ball of love, or just a white field of love. And then they'll decide or be told that it's time to come back, that there's stuff they need to do, or they'll decide it on their own. They'd, look, there's some things I'm not ready yet. I got to do some stuff with my wife and my children. And boom, they'll be back again.
Yeah, I really think he came back to help me create Gabrielle.
Okay.
And to help me move back into my power before he left. It's interesting, they did a CAT scan or an MRI or whatever the test it was, and they couldn't find any scar tissue. They couldn't find any sign of the aneurysm at all the next day.
Ah, there you go. Healing, that's accompanying the near-death experience. That's another thing that's reported. The other thing that's reported, and this is sort of leans towards what you were saying earlier. My wife was told that she wouldn't have any children, that it'd be difficult for her to have children. And lo and behold, we have three children. So...
Well, and I want people to hear this, because so often we give our power of creation away to people who are supposed to know.
Right.
And they don't. They don't know about your creation when you take responsibility to demand it.
Right. Or our interaction with the universe. If something is going to happen, it's the universe... you know, wants that to happen. You are part of the universe. Therefore, if the universe wants that to happen, you want that to happen. Therefore, it happens. And any outside authority can't change that.
I believe that. I absolutely believe that. I have a little bit different spin on it, however, because my work is based on the I Am principle.
Mm-hmm.
And in the I Am discourses, it literally says the energy... The I Am presence, God, universal love, the creative force, whatever term you're comfortable with, it cannot create for you without direction. Just like an actor, if I'm on stage and the director says, well, just do anything, Dee, I don't know how to bring that creation forward, right?
Right, right, right.
So the universe is going, look, I'll say yes to anything you want. I am not here to judge you. I'm not here to believe that it's right or wrong or better or worse. I am here to create for you. Tell me what you want. And if we are not consciously creating our own lives, we become created upon by society and specialists and fearful people who do not know how it works.
Right.
So how did Christopher's death, being the fact that he passed away fairly young, impacted you as a whole?
Well, it devastated me. And I don't know. I don't know what... I'm a pretty strong broad, and I have a huge life force. But I truthfully don't know what would have happened to me and what I would have done had I not had Gabrielle and had to rally for her. Mm-hmm. I really don't know.
Okay.
Now I do it for myself. And I think that's important for parents to hear. We need to choose to do it for ourselves and not do it because or not because of the child or the children. So, I mean, you know, he was my power. He was my safety. He was my soulmate, my best friend, and I was able to go and do things that I would never have done because I depended on Chris to take care of me.
Okay.
And what's interesting is in the regression that Dolores did for me, you know, she asked me when I was under, why did Christopher have to leave? Mm-hmm. And the reply was so that I could move back into my own power.
It's a good answer.
Yeah, because as long as he was there, I was perfectly happy not to be as powerful as I could be.
No, that's a good answer. So you had a regression. You had a regression with Dolores Cannon. That's great.
Yeah, she's going to let me actually post most of it on my website at imdwallace.com. It's incredibly, incredibly powerful, people. I won't have it up for probably another 3 weeks.
Okay.
But it's, you know, the message that I was told to take out into the world is put down your sword, put down your struggle. Your love is your power.
Okay. Yeah, just so everybody knows, Dee has her own website. It's imdwallace.com. And if you go on that website, you'll see the home. You can see the webcast she's done, any media. She's got videos on there. She has her upcoming... her upcoming traveling she's doing with Dolores Cannon. You're doing a thing with Sedona Life Center.
Yeah, that's where I'm at right now.
Oh, good for you. And that'll be happening in tomorrow.
Now. Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, good. That'll be awesome.
And then in September, I'm in Santa Fe with Jeffrey Hoppe.
Okay.
And
where in Santa Fe are you going to be?
You know, I don't remember. It's on my website.
It's on her website. There you
go.
Yeah,
I don't remember. I'm a living the moment kind of girl.
Hey, she's got two radio shows that she's doing. She's doing the Conscious Creative Creation radio show, and she's doing Bright Light radio show. And both of those are on her website at imdwallace.com. On the right-hand side, under events, you'll see the work she's doing with Dolores Cannon. Then you'll see both of her radio shows below there, and all kinds of. I was looking at your website earlier. It's got all kinds of neat stuff on it. It's full,
thank
of,
you.
Full of great
yeah.
information. And thank you can you. Also order the book there, correct?
You can order the book. I've got a lot of free downloads. I've got some awesome webinars that I've done around creating your life in various subjects. And there's just a lot of really, you know, Jennifer McLean calls me the irreverent healer. And I kind of like that because I think healing and creation have become really woo-woo and way too reverent, you know?
Yeah.
And we got to have some fun with it. I mean, what's up if you can't enjoy sex, have a glass of wine, and know you can create your life at the same time? I don't get it.
Yeah, but you can do all of the above at the same time.
Yeah. I don't get it. I mean, sex is fun, and a glass of wine is fun, and laughing's fun, and sometimes, you know...
Now,
on my shows, I let a four-letter word rip that would really embarrass my grandmother, but that's who I am. That's authentically who I am.
She'd say you're going straight to hell.
Yeah, in a handbasket.
In the handbasket, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. In a handbasket, Dee
Dee. Dee Dee. So when you do your radio show, you have people call in. Are you doing like sort of like, is it like a, just a, conversation or is it counseling?
Well,
just
I
trying to help people get back their power.
Yes, on the last one. I don't call it counseling. It literally is a healing technique. And people can call in and go, you know, Dee, I'm taking responsibility for my life. I am holding the focus. I'm doing it, but I'm still not creating blah, blah, blah. And we go, okay, let's get to it. And
right.
within 2 minutes, we get to what the block is, what the belief is, why they can't move back into their power, what they need to do. A lot of times we get messages about particular people, particular ages. And it's miraculous work. People go, oh, my God. How did you know that went down when I was 4 years old? All I'm doing is extrapolating the messages and the information out of their energy field. That's
right.
All I'm doing. You know, it's like I'm tapping into their subconscious, their superconscious, whatever term you put on it. And I give them back the information, and then they've got to shift their energy around it.
Right, right. That's really cool. Well, we're sorry, but we got to take a quick break right now. And we'll see you guys on the other side.
If you suffer or know someone that suffers from back pain, knee pain, or any other chronic or sports-related pains, you need to visit LapingoProducts.com. Dealing with pain can affect every aspect of your life, which is why our products are designed to bring you real relief. Our products are not only easy to use, effective, and safe for the entire family, but our prices are competitive and offer a complete satisfaction guarantee. Visit LapingoProducts.com, real life solutions for pain-free living.
Hello, this is Scott Jordan, and I would personally like to thank all of our listeners for their emails of encouragement. It means a great deal to us. All of Spectrum shows are available in two formats, an MP3 stream you can listen to on our site, as well as a YouTube version. All of Spectrum shows are full length and free to listen to, and if I have my way, always will be. Tom and myself do all this work out of pocket, and freely give our time and effort to giving you, the listener, the best, most informative experience possible. I would also like to thank our listeners who have donated in the past to help with our expenses. Every donation goes directly to keeping the project alive. Thank you, enjoy, and keep listening.
AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com is your gateway to over 500 products ranging from herbs to pain relief products, health, and well-being. AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com is dedicated to educating and empowering you to make the best possible informed decisions about what products you can use to improve your health and well-being. Visit AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com and bring about change in your life.
So, Dee, are you doing any type of work in the acting area right now?
Oh, yeah. I'm really excited about this film that actually a group of Canadian young filmmakers did. It's called Exit Humanity. And John Geddes directed it. It's coming out on the festival circuit, where I'm hoping that it gets into TIFF so we can come up there, the Toronto, you know, Film Festival. And I'm really excited about it. If there is such a thing as a poetic zombie movie, this is it.
Oh, that one. I looked it up. What's it called again?
It's called Exit Humanity.
Exit Humanity, yeah. I looked it up. I was reading all about it. Do you work in Toronto a lot?
You know, I used to work in Vancouver all the time.
Oh, okay.
But you see, you all have rules that we can't come work there, even though America, anybody can come work and take our work away from us.
It's true.
Yeah.
Well, Toronto is a lot more active than Vancouver now.
I love Canada. I was, I was supposed to come into a series that was shooting up there, and they introduced me in the last episode they did, and then they canceled the show.
Oh.
So I would have gotten to move to Toronto for a while, which I was pretty stoked about.
Yeah, Toronto.
But, you know, we'll just have to create another one, right, guys?
Exactly.
Piece of cake. I think I'd like to talk more about this this outlook you have, more so than sort of the career in movies and TV, although it's all sort of, it's interesting how it's interwoven, because you've named the book Spiritual Lessons from a Life in Acting. So
yeah.
Your life has been sort of bubbled, the bubble of your life. Acting has been a large part of that bubble.
Absolutely.
My wife loves to talk about bubbles, because basically the way she looks at life is you create your own reality. She says, just because I'm aware there's Tabasco sauce in my pantry doesn't mean I'm baking it in my pie.
Exactly. And that's what Abraham Hicks means. An earthquake can happen all around you and not affect you.
And the rocks miss you completely. They'll fall all around you but miss you.
Yeah. And I think, too, that it's a lot about your perception. You know, I mean, we all hear that stupid age-old, you know, saying, is the glass half full or half empty? But we don't really receive the enormity of the fact that your world is literally created on what perception of that you have. If you're gonna see the lack in life, everything that you look at and everything that you create will have that energy in it, because you're creating yourself as someone who sees the lack. And if people could just get, it's not about creating anything outside of you, it's only about creating what's within you. And when you create yourself, then you create everything else from that, then we'd have a lot easier time in this lovely little game we're playing of, I call it the Play-Doh game,
mm-hmm.
of, you know, you don't like what you're creating in your life, scrunch your Play-Doh up and make something else.
Exactly. Yeah, we're going to call that one the D. Wallace rant.
You know, I call it my Baptist preacher. When I get really excited and riled up and I go into my Baptist preacher and I don't take a breath for 10 minutes, you know?
Yeah, but we just got a D. Wallace rant. I like it.
Somebody called and asked me who I channeled.
You said, I channel me. Thank you.
I said, you know, I don't know. Let's ask. So when we asked on the show, what came back was everybody. And I said, oh, well, then I channel God, because God's everybody. And the boy said, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I mean, you know, if it's all one energy and there's no separation, you can't have it both ways. We're God, God's us. you're God, everything's energy as God, playing around and experiencing energy in lots of different ways that we call good, bad.
Right.
Channeling is simply downloading information.
Yep.
That's all it is. Yep. And but you can, it is true that you can download a lot more information when you get your conscious mind out of the way, because it allows you to open to new unlimited thoughts.
Right.
And as long as you have to stay in limited, this is what I was taught, this isn't possible thinking, then you can't download the information that we haven't gotten before.
Yeah.
Einstein talked about this all the time, that some of his biggest discoveries came from when he went into his imagination. That's just another way of saying I got me out of the way and I went out and I said, wow, what's possible in this daydream?
Yeah. So, well, there's a lot of different examples of people getting their conscious self or their linear self out of the way. Timothy Leary did it with chemicals. Other people have done it with meditation.
I do it with an acting technique.
Oh, you have an acting technique to get yourself out of the way. Okay, I got to hear this.
that's what I talk about in Bright Light.
Okay.
And that's what Charles Conrad taught. And then when I became a channeler, I went, well, wait a minute, I've been doing this with my characters since the beginning of my career. D would step aside and the character would come in.
Right.
That was what he taught us. Well, my God, if I can do it in my acting, why am I not doing it in my life?
Ah, okay.
And so I am. And so can everybody.
Right.
But, you know, people go, it would help us, D, if you talked in a voice or your eyes rolled back in your head. Because right now, talking to you, you know, I'm in the channel. I'm channeling now. Right. When I'm talking to you.
Of course.
So
it would be more. Would it be more believable if you squeaked like a dolphin?
Or you know, if I talked like this, but I don't know why people think
35,000-year-old warrior voice.
Yeah, why we have to look like some altered universe thing, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the facade that always kind of bothered me about it. So.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I can't say whether it's real or not, but I think, like I said, an example of sort of just stepping out of the way and allowing that to come, that higher intelligence to come through, that pure self to come through, is Esther Hicks. You know, I'd go with that, no problem, because I think she's just stepping out of the way.
And that's, you know, really what you do when you go under hypnosis. You step out of the way and allow information to come through.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, and Tom is a hypnotherapist, so he knows all about that and altered states of consciousness and stuff like that. Would you agree with that, Tom, as far as the hypnosis part of you?
Most definitely.
Yeah, okay. When you have your lessons, if you're, because you also do trainings, don't you? You do?
Yeah, I do. I just did a 2-day training, the first training, on how to do my work, you know, training other people to channel and receive information. And I use books and I'm directed to songs and movies and, you know, things like that, that kind of open up the direction toward what I'm supposed to download.
Okay.
So I taught him how to do all that. And you can hear me do it on both my shows. But I said, too, you know, everybody's got to be open to their own method. So I'm just teaching you the core of what I do. You've got to allow yourself to open up and be directed to how to use this through your own channel.
Right.
You know? I think that's really important, that there aren't any rules, there aren't any regulations. Hold the intention and ask, and then believe that you're good enough, right?
Right, right, right. So it's just getting the conscious mind out of the way. And do you work with meditation techniques and stuff like that?
No.
No? Okay.
No, I don't really... I know I'm going to get into trouble here, but I don't really...
It's a good place to get in trouble.
I don't really believe we have to do a lot of hoopla stuff anymore.
All right.
I've heard that.
That's fine with me.
Yeah. Who has time, first of all? I think I kind of live in the channel, quite frankly, guys.
Mm-hmm. You're living meditation.
Yeah, I do. And I do 10 minutes of deep breathing with, a focused intent in the morning, and that's kind of sets my day, and that's pretty much it. I do try to focus on deep breaths throughout the day, and some good exhales, because that keeps your channel open. Any actor will tell you the more relaxed your body is, the more the energy flows through it, and the easier your emotions and everything is to access about the character. So that's just a no-brainer for me, too.
Okay. So that's just part of it. It sounds to me like I don't think meditation should be in a cave meditating for 20 years. That to me is, you do 10 minutes getting relaxed and centered, and you're good to go. Then you can just
hold that
for the rest of the day.
Direct your day, and this is what I want. This is what I'm claiming. This is what I expect to show up, and then go do it. I mean, it's easy to sit in a room by yourself and stay centered. Try it going out, three kids, and they've got colic, and they've got the flu, and they've got this, and you've got 2 hours of sleep. You don't have 10 minutes of meditation. That's the real test of can you stay balanced.
Right. I agree with that. Because life can be busy. Life can be busy, and I totally agree with that. Okay, I'm going to wrap it up. But what I want to do is I just want you to give out your website, and where you're going to be speaking, and your two radio shows.
Okay, my website is imdwallace.com. I am speaking in Sedona, Arizona tomorrow. I'm doing a workshop and private sessions on Thursday here. And then Dolores Cannon is teaching her two-day level, I believe it's level one, training for her hypnotherapy regression. Then I'm going to Antigua for 2 weeks.
Oh. Yay! Yay!
My first vacation I've had in 5 years.
So my. Really? Wow.
Yeah, I'll be speaking in Santa Fe with Jeffrey Hoppe in September. I'm in negotiations for a beautiful film to be done in Rome in September or October. My fourth book is being edited right now. Right now, the working title is Getting Stuff.
Getting Stuff. I like
Getting it. Stuff. S-T-U-F-F.
Stuff.
Right. And here they're calling me because my ride's here. So, my one radio show is Mondays at 5 o'clock Pacific Standard Time.
Okay.
And the Thursday show is 8 a.m. in the morning.
Okay.
Thursdays Pacific Standard Time. So you can find this all on imdwallace.com. It's been a great time, guys. It's been absolutely great. I feel like, we were sitting down having a glass of wine or a cup of tea together. It's just been awesome.
That's what we like to do with our shows. Our shows are more a conversation than an interview. I figure you can get more genuine answers from people if you just talk to them as if you're sitting around the table.
I agree. And it's been great. So thank you for having me, really.
And thank you for being on the show. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.